and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast where nothing is boring, everything is just interesting. Our least thrilling introduction that we've had so far. I feel like Martin and Alex are too good at this introduction, and I'm just going to stick with the old same boring plain one.
But that's literally what we say today, every week.
No, you always do something more interesting than that. But joining me, as you can tell, are Martin and Alex. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Not too bad, thanks, mate.
Not
how are you?
Not bad. Oh, fine, thank you. Happy to be back discussing things with you. And today we will be discussing some very interesting things. Particularly, we'll be looking at whether there will be a new Cold War, particularly Woo-hoo. In relation to China and things that have emerged from China this past week. January 2021, for anyone who may be listening to this in 2023 or whatever. Let us know if we're right, by the way. Comment below. If you listen to this in 2023. Has it happened yet?
Yeah. I mean, in the midst of a Cold War, do you always know that you're in a Cold War? The question. Rising tensions. At what point does it become a Cold War and not just tensions?
That's a brilliant question. Yeah. That's fantastic.
I mean, maybe I'm getting into this too early. We've got some other stuff to discuss before then, haven't we?
Yeah, we'll reveal the answer to that fascinating question when we actually discuss the main meat of this podcast. But before that, of course, we'll be looking at our favourite comments of the week sent to us by you lovely listeners. And before that, we'll be sharing things that we learned. And at the end of this episode, we'll be doing the quiz, which I have prepared and hopefully will be interesting for you both.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to be difficult.
What does that mean?
It means that I can't remember what I've put in the question.
So, classic. Okay.
So let's kick things off with things that we learned this week. Martin, what have you learned this week?
Well, I learned about a phenomenon. And this phenomenon is called the CSI effect.
As in the TV series?
Yeah, well, kind of. Kind of. Oh. So it's based on the TV series. It's basically CSI, crime scene investigation, and those kind of programs have become such an institution, haven't they? Probably since, mid-90s, really, when they really kicked off. And that has had an effect on real-life investigations, and in particular, convicting people that are accused of crimes. And so basically, what this effect suggests is that often when convicting someone, a jury will have an exaggerated a portrayal of what forensic science shows, or what the perception of forensic science is. So, for instance, people will be watching these programs and think that DNA results will always give you like an exact match, whereas in real life this is not the case. And as a result, people have, juries have basically either convicted people because they believe this information, this particular evidence, to be stronger than it is, or conversely, not convicted people despite other overwhelming evidence because they believe that, based on like the TV shows that they've seen, that this evidence is actually a lot stronger than it is. And so if it's not there, then they believe that the case falls apart. So this is pretty crazy. But what the effect that it's had is that prosecutors have had to basically up their game. So if you're going to prosecute someone, prosecutors now look overwhelmingly for convincing ways to persuade a jury that the evidence they have, especially like the DNA forensic evidence, is overwhelming. And they kind of prioritize this over kind of other evidence such as witness testimony or anything like that, or circumstantial evidence.
So they walk into the courtroom with some sunglasses on and like a stylish suit.
Big time.
This guy's guilty of sin.
Exactly, Alex. It's precisely that. But this made me think. I mean, that is interesting, and it's not exactly surprising, is that people watch these shows and they believe what they believe. But what really interested me about this whole thing is this a good thing or a bad thing? Needing stronger evidence, needing especially stronger forensic evidence, is that a good thing? That in a lot of cases, people aren't convicting others based on circumstantial evidence or based on testimonies, but because they value this kind of evidence as more importance.
I feel like giving people a warped view of what criminal justice is and what like forensic science does probably isn't the best thing. Like, I feel like, do they need to get an expert in with courtrooms now or mm-hmm. or when they're choosing the jury and just say, how many of you watch CSI? And then all the people that put their hands up, they're like, get out.
Yeah.
Get out. We don't want you here.
Disqualified.
You're the wild cards yeah. that are going to start believing.
That's what like, they've been doing. Where's,
he can't be it. They're, you know, they're too, he's too obvious. He's the obvious suspect. Where's the twist? Well, it was the judge all along.
Exactly. But that's, isn't it? You watch some of those programs now and you automatically go to, okay, who's the least likely person? Yeah. It's the first thing you do. Like the person at the beginning who you see running away from the crime scene, you know they haven't done it. In real life, that's not the case, clearly. But what you did say about them weeding out people who had been influenced by crime scene investigation TV shows is true.
Really?
Yeah, judges have started to... judges and, of course, the prosecution and defensive legal teams have started to ask people their views on particular parts of CSI and specifically whether they've watched certain shows and about it, which is really interesting.
Amazing. Do you think you could enhance a picture?
Well, yes, good question. I mean, what's even more interesting, there's a few stats here, and there's a study of over 400 prosecutors. And 56% believe that this CSI effect has influenced juries. And 81% believe that the CSI effect has actually influenced judges too.
No.
81%. Wow. So they believe it affects judges more That's than the bad. Juries, which is pretty crazy. Anyway, yeah.
That's bad. That's really interesting because it speaks to the necessity and the burden on, I'm going to say artists, a bit of a generous term perhaps, for people creating dramas and fictions to be accurate in the way they present things. And I'm one of those annoying people who likes to check how accurate things are and criticizes films and TV for not being accurate enough. Not just courtroom dramas, but, you know, historical dramas, you know, Braveheart notoriously is a lot of falsehoods in that. Or I should say misleading things going on. This is a scary statistic that bears out that there is, well, perhaps there should be more of a burden on filmmakers and TV dramatists and people who write plays and novels to be accurate so that people don't get the wrong idea.
It's not just in this, as you say, like in all sorts of media, like for instance any cop show, they go into the police station and everyone's using it's dark with everyone's using table lamps and it's like, why would it be dark in an office? It's no sense.
But then I guess, can you put that on the artist though, or is it like, should people take personal responsibility and be able to recognize that a TV show is going to be different from real life?
That's a good question.
Before they get into the courtroom, they should maybe have a seminar on forensic science. Maybe that should be a thing. They should have someone to come in and just say what's a myth and what's actually true. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's that disclaimer on a lot of historical dramas where, you know, certain events or characters have been dramatized or fictionalized for dramatic purposes. That thing that they put at the end of the credits, which I guess is the equivalent of saying, you've been warned, this isn't necessarily exactly what happened and the way it happened. And that's the excuse. It's a good question, actually. Maybe we should do this as a topic, perhaps, for a different podcast. In the meantime, Alex, what did you learn this week?
So I learned a little bit about Scientology's founder, a Mr. L. Ron Hubbard. Have either of you seen the documentary Going Clear?
No.
Oh, it's a brilliant documentary. Would recommend it.
Is that from the actress's? Was it the actress's point of view? What's her name?
It's from like a lot of ex Scientologists.
Okay, I've heard about it. But interviews with them.
Yeah, well, it kind of goes into a lot of his background. And one of the things I learned this week was that L. Ron Hubbard was. He was in the Navy before, obviously, going on to found Scientology. And he was actually in command of a Navy warship during World War II.
Really?
And he ended up being engaged in combat for 68 hours and conducted live fire exercises on a Mexican island with nobody. He was engaged in combat with nothing.
Wait. So... How did this come about?
That's a good question.
He thought that he was engaged with someone.
He must have thought that he was engaged with someone attacking.
So he saw on the radar. He saw a bit of a
Gulf of Tonkin, but
a beat, yeah. But actually, it was an island.
Yeah, exactly.
So was he? Did he fire? I mean, I imagine he must have. Yeah, he must have fired some missiles at an island.
Yeah, and he was apparently disregarding orders from higher ups in an investigation following how this could have happened.
68 hours.
That was the thing. My goodness, 68 hours.
Yeah, what point do you think? Oh, maybe I made a mistake.
This island, so, this ship is not moving, and it's massive.
I know. For the you'd stop after like 10 minutes, wouldn't you? Like after the first round, you'd see what happened. Mm-hmm. But he believed that he saw two Imperial Japanese Navy submarines approximately 10 miles off the shore of Cape Lookout, Oregon. Both the sonar operator and Lieutenant Hubbard thought that the echo of an active sonar ping combined with an apparent engine noises heard through the ship's hydrophone indicated contact with a submarine. And so over the next 68 hours, the ship expended 37 depth charges in a battle. Yeah. And he was basically, this all transpired and... he was fired from his role and
not a surprise.
Dismissed from the military. And of course, then, as one of his later on, when he founded Scientology, he would of course brag that he was a decorated war hero.
Yeah.
after all this, so
it's always the way. He fits the profile, doesn't he, of a scam artist through and through. Everything about him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's madness, especially when there's no. I mean, if the depth charges, they're below you, aren't they? Because depth charges. Fall to the depths, don't they? So it's not like he was firing missiles at the island, who were then 37 torpedoes who had not received one back.
Yeah,
but no wonder he was fired, because even if it was an honest mistake, after 68 hours, there's a point where you have to rationally say, okay, it's either gone or I made a mistake. And of course, if you spent all that ammunition and fuel, then you put the ship at jeopardy when a real submarine comes along.
37 over 68 hours. So they were sat there firing one off roughly every 2 hours. Presumably after that, receiving no indication that anything was attacking them.
Yeah.
They were just there like, should we throw another one down there?
Just give it 15. Give it 15 minutes. We'll, go on. A bit early, but...
Yeah.
Crazy. Oh, dear. Oh, well.
There you go. There's a little bit of a background into...
Thank you for that. That's good.
Ridiculous, but unsurprising.
Well, from Scientology to science, this week I learned a little bit about Marie Curie, the famous physicist and chemist who made important discoveries in radioactivity, particularly with uranium and radium, I think it was called. And I learned that the Curie family is the family with the most Nobel Prizes in history. Five members of the family have received Nobel Prizes.
Wow.
And it's actually, it blew my mind to discover this, because Marie Curie herself won two, 1903 and 1911, I think, in physics and chemistry, or maybe just chemistry. She shared the first one with her husband, Pierre Curie.
That count as two or one?
That counts as two members of the family.
Okay.
So there's one Nobel Prize shared between two people and two members of the family, yeah. So that's only two Nobel Prizes, but two different occasions, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then, incredibly, I didn't know this, her daughter, Irene, and her daughter's husband, Frederick, won a Nobel Prize, again, jointly between them, in physics in 1935. And then her other daughter, Ev's husband, Henri, won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1965.
Wow.
Yeah,
you got to think if you were the the great niece of or whoever, you'd be like, just put my name on the papers. Let's just expand this family tradition.
Yeah,
I'd say exactly. And
you wouldn't want to be the weak link in that family, would you?
wouldn't.
And the great grandson Alex is hoping to make a lot of YouTube content. One day these days. You playing some video? You're going to be a Twitch streamer, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
you're getting really good at Fortnite. Yeah,
I'll happily talk about my relatives. Yeah. Oh man, that's crazy. Do you think there's more opportunities to become a winner if if your mum's Marie Curie. I mean, maybe that's disingenuous. Maybe it's disingenuous. maybe I'm being really horrible to to Irene, was it?
Irene and Ev, yeah. Irene won it along with her husband, yeah. Doing the same work in physics on radiation. Yeah.
Obviously, they're super bright and have done some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But would you be more likely to win if you were? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a nice story for the, who are they called? Who are the people at the Nobel Prize? Who judges that?
The committee, Nobel Prize committee. Aren't they secret? I thought the judges were...
That makes sense.
Anonymous. I don't know. I could be. The nominees are definitely
all members
secret.
Of the Curie family.
I was going to say.
They're all Curie. Yeah. Yeah, and the grandchildren are just like, well, haven't we got one yet? Come on. Yeah. Well, that was what I learned this week.
That's really interesting, though. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Thank
you. Yeah.
A lot of pressure in that family.
No pressure now at all. I guess since the scientific discoveries were all in radiation, and now that's clearly a bad thing, and everyone's kind of learned the limits of pursuing that kind of research, where do they go from there? What Nobel Prizes can they win? Please tell us your thoughts on all those three really interesting facts I thought that we brought up today. And speaking of your thoughts, comments of the week. So my comment is from DP Vermont, who wrote on our last podcast episode, which was discussing the pretty crazy things going on in America before the inauguration, particularly the Capitol riots. And I think we're asking the question of how does the US come back from, well, everything that's happened in the last 4 years. And I thought DP Vermont made a really interesting point, which is they say, I see Trump as a symptom. So why would you want to go back to a pre-Trump era? Because that's why we got Trump in the first place. That was just a really, really good point, I thought. So anybody, obviously, a common accusation against people who support Trump is that they've got this nostalgia for a time that America shouldn't go back to. But equally, people on the other side who are post-Trump have a nostalgia for a time that maybe they shouldn't go back to because it led to where they are now. I thought it was a very good point.
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic point. Yeah, I mean, people when they voted for Trump, a lot of them were voting against the status quo, right? Like they didn't want just another politician, and so yeah, I mean, maybe that's the risk with Biden, and we'll see. I guess we'll see who the Republicans run in 4 years' time.
It'd be really interesting to see.
And there's always a possibility that Trump's going to split the vote with the Republicans now. With his, it looks like he might be making a new party. The Patriot MAGA party.
MAGA. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that. I'd be interested to see. And I imagine that quite a few influential people within the Republican Party will be probably trying to dissuade him from doing that, because it would split the Republican vote, I imagine.
Mm. I wonder if it would make them more or less likely to vote to convict him in the Senate then, because then he wouldn't be able to hold public office.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a risky strategy. Yeah. Interesting. Well, I've got a comment from Lady Gigi, and this is in relation to one of the quiz questions a couple of weeks ago about the odds of finding a double yolked egg in your box. And Lady Gigi says, the odds are 1 in 1,000, I believe. And Lady Gigi says, I had a dozen eggs with double yolks. The whole dozen. My sister and I freaked out, then ate them all anyway. And
raw,
yeah, sounds like it, doesn't it? Neck.
Shell on.
Apparently she threw away the first couple and then was like, what am I doing, throwing away these eggs?
Yeah.
And my kink adult store, great, replied to this saying, I've had that too. Whole carton of eggs, never forget. Hashtag don't forget. So it does make me think, does this now mean that you actually had a 1 in 12,000 chance of having a whole carton full of this? Or is it that once you get one you know that egg's been laying all the eggs in your box? Anyway, so that's interesting. I've never had
that's
one.
That's really, yeah.
And the odds wouldn't work that way anyway.
They
would. If it was, it would be like one in a thousand times a thousand.
Of course. But interesting anyway, as in because they'd all have to be in that one single box.
Yeah.
You do hear that though, don't you? You hear that like people who have double yolks, if you find one, you're likely to find another one in the box.
We can all
come from the same chicken.
We can dream, Alex.
Let's find engineer what dogs we want these days. Can we get chickens that can have all chickens have double yolks? Come on.
Yeah.
We've got the technology. I'm
disappointed that we haven't done that already. Come on.
I want 5 yolks in my eggs.
The issue is that a recipe book will say, oh, we need 1 yolk and white. And you'll be like, oh, I've got 2 now, so I have to just sift that one out. And just becomes a logistical nightmare.
I hate recipes where they want you to separate, but they don't want the yolk, they just want the white. I'm like, what? Yeah. You're just wasting this yolk.
And what do you do with a yolk? Yeah. Just
down
a yolk.
Raw.
Down it. Anything with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the comment.
That was good. Thank you for that comment.
Fair enough. Well, I've got a comment from Valorum, who commented on our last podcast about everything going on in America. But on a slightly different note to that, he says, maybe you guys should go back to Epping Forest and have Alex scream for Dick Turpin again. He might have the Holy Grail. Epping Forest 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Screaming for Dick. yeah, I mean, it would be fun to go back, couldn't it?
I'd love to do it.
What people don't realise during that filming when they watched it was we genuinely, when it got dark, we weren't playing up to the fact that we were lost in a cold wood in the middle of winter. We were lost. We went round and round for hours and hours and hours. I think the hardest thing was to kind of try and keep composed about filming without just seeming completely pissed off.
Yeah.
But when it got so dark.
It got cold. It got so dark. I couldn't see a foot in front of me.
We were thinking, are we going to... the trains as well. I mean, none of us live near Epping Forest. We just wouldn't have got home that night.
It was a bit touch and go, yeah. We just kept walking and the forest just kept going on and it felt like we were walking around in circles.
And my bodies had been dumped there and of course we were hearing and seeing things and then we found that goo. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm convinced that goo led us home. It did.
It's leading us out. I think those words actually came out of my mouth when we're filming that.
But maybe need to recreate the video because it was a good one.
Yeah. In regards to your comment, I'd love to go back there and actually get the the EVP meter.
Mm-hmm. Is that the thing that broke.
Love to actually get that working. Maybe get some more ghost hunting equipment and go back.
Yeah, there's so much gear that we could get that we didn't use. Get our ghost trap, our proton wands.
Yeah, get a radio box or something.
Neutron wands.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good idea. Maybe when everything dies down with this pandemic we're in. Yeah.
Well, thank you for those wonderful comments. And from the Debbie Downer of the pandemic onto the Debbie Upper of Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I should come up with a better name than Debbie Upper. It's probably...
I mean, you know, a Cold War is nothing compared to 2020, so bring it on, to be honest. What else can 2021 throw at us? Why did I just say that?
The Cold War involves proxy wars as well as spies. You know, there's potentially a lot of death and destruction in a Cold War, even though it's technically not hot. That's besides the point. That's besides the point. So we were inspired to talk about this question. Will there be a new Cold War by an announcement, I guess is the right way to express it, that President Xi Jinping of China... Sorry, I almost said of China fame. Just of China. Said this week, in which he kind of very implicitly criticized, without naming, Joe Biden and America, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And he basically said, there will be another Cold War unless you change your policies towards China. Because, of course, during the Trump years, America has become very isolationist. And in particular, Trump ramped up the rhetoric against China and started the trade war with China, which, to my knowledge, is still ongoing. There are still tariffs being raised and Chinese goods that aren't being sold in America and that can't get in. And American industry is directly competing with China and under Trump being favored and prioritized by the US government and for the US market. And the question is, we don't know exactly yet whether President Joe Biden will continue that approach.
It seems quite likely.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It seems quite likely.
Yeah,
not going to roll back on that.
No. He's very much in favour of people buying American to boost up US manufacturing,
which is a natural response in the pandemic situation. You want to drive that economic recovery,
exactly.
So, yeah.
It's quite interesting. Of all the, like, it seems like Biden's been the polar opposite with Trump in many regards, but on China, it's actually a lot of their policies seem to kind of overlap a little bit.
You think at the very least he'd be less, he'd make sure that it's not, I want for a better word, childish. There's no childish antics going on. And I don't know. It seems like there was a lot of baiting China, wasn't there, over the last few years?
Yes.
Which I don't know, it's more personal, but we know that Xi Jinping, when we look at the Winnie the Pooh cartoons, can be quite affected by personal attacks. So I imagine that those kind of things will subside just by the nature of the man. But in terms of the core policies about, the embargoes, not buying Chinese, making sure that America comes first when it comes to manufacturing and being fairly protectionist, will probably continue over the next 4 years.
Yeah. So I'll just quote Xi Jinping's words so that everyone listening can understand exactly what we're referring to. And he gave a speech in which he warned against reversing globalization. And he was particularly framing this in the context of economic recovery globally in the wake of COVID-19. And he said, "To build small circles or start a new Cold War, to reject, threaten, or intimidate others, to willfully impose decoupling, supply disruption, or sanctions, economic sanctions, and to create isolation or estrangement will only push the world into division and even confrontation." And of course, he didn't name America, but it's obvious who he's talking about there. And this comes also, I think, just a couple of weeks after one of the parting shots of the Trump administration was the Secretary of State, isn't it? Mike Pompeo, I think.
Yeah.
Officially declared China's treatment of the Uyghur people genocide.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a big deal. It's not just throwing a word around. That's a big technical classification of what they're doing to the Uyghur people as genocide. And traditionally, in the past, when America has identified a genocide, they have done something about it, and often that's involved going to war. So it's not something that Joe Biden can easily reverse. It's very hard to say, this is genocide, and then the next day say, well, actually...
It's leaving behind a landmine, isn't it, saying that?
Yeah. Some things can't really be unsaid.
Although, according to the organization Foreign Policy, who specialize in analyzing foreign policy, they've said that, weirdly, although Joe Biden might not want to reverse that declaration of the treatment of the Uyghur people as genocide, there's not really anything America can do about it. Because it's partly because of the way it's done. It's not so much a physical going in and wiping people out in the same way that we think of genocide, such as what happened in Rwanda or what happened in Germany during the Second World War. They're not so much physically taking people and executing them. They are just systematically, slowly removing the Uyghur culture from Chinese, from Xinjiang, is that the name of the province?
Yeah,
probably got it wrong.
Xinjiang.
Yeah, mispronouncing it. Apologies. Yeah. which is it's still terrible, and I'm sure there still looks like there's some dodgy stuff like slave labor going on, which is obviously horrific. And maybe resulting in death.
There's been sterilizations as well, which is
yes,
pretty proactive in abortions in regards to preventing their culture from reproducing for future generations.
Yeah. And of course, this is just Xi Jinping, which will be interesting because the only Cold War that we know of in history so far is between Russia and America, but that was communism and capitalism. And here again, China is still officially communist. Even though it's much more of a capitalist society economically than it ever was under communism. So it's the same old enemies, but new countries. But that doesn't mean other countries, now that Joe Biden is president, won't join China in their Cold War against America. Because Trump, for all his faults, at least, was pretty pally with Russia and reversed economic sanctions. He also was pretty pally with North Korea and was the first US president to meet the North Korean leader in, what was it, three decades? And it might even have been the first US president on North Korean soil. I can't remember if that was the case.
I think so, yeah. Did any president ever meet a North Korean leader before Trump?
I'm trying to think.
I thought he was the first one.
He might well have been.
So what do you think? Do you think Xi Jinping is being sincere? Or is he just kind of making a ploy because economically China depends on globalization? Or is... And if he is being sincere, what do you think is the potential scale of this Cold War?
I don't understand what his end goal would be from having a Cold War. Like, surely that doesn't help his globalized visions of, you know, surely that doesn't economically help China entering into a Cold War just because the US is being a bit more protectionist. It feels like it's escalating it to 100 when it's really down low already.
I mean, the other side of that is you could argue that potentially the US and China are already in a new Cold War. You look at these trade embargoes and the deterioration of the relationship between the US and China over the last few years, but especially in late 2019 and 2020. And then, of course, you've got Chinese hackers and US hackers hacking each other, and you have that. It's the new frontier of warfare, isn't it? And so you've got to ask yourself, is this basically rhetoric just for the new administration? I don't think there's necessarily a massive shift here from Xi Jinping. He's just letting Biden know in no uncertain terms that the US and China are mutually reliant on one another. But at the same time, the relationship's probably the worst it's ever been. I can't think of a time where the US-China relationships have been worse. And so, I don't know. I would argue that potentially they've got to the stage where they are in a Cold War all but for name.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree.
Have they done anything? Has Xi Jinping done anything, has it taken any acts that would suggest he is meaningful in what he says?
So, interestingly, in the last few days, Taiwan, which obviously China views as part of China, and there's that ongoing disagreement there. Taiwan, it views itself as a separate entity to China. But they've reported a large incursion by Chinese warplanes for the second day running. So China sent warplanes in their airspace.
Wow.
And this is obviously, the timing of this is impeccable with the new administration coming in to the US. It's also interesting because Joe Biden, I think for the first time in decades, invited representatives from Taiwan to his inauguration, kind of giving a symbolic, I don't know, I mean, is that symbolic that he's recognizing Taiwan as their own country?
That is a pretty big step for, because America, I think, has unofficially always supported Taiwan's claims for independence, but never officially declared their support for it. But they've always done things like they sell arms to Taiwan, I think, which obviously really annoys China. But they've never officially declared that Taiwan is independent from China. So that's a huge step.
Yeah, seems to be.
It does sound like Joe Biden might, whether intentionally or not, be gearing up towards a long-term tensions with China.
Yeah.
Do you think that's inevitable with, like, you know, China's getting more international power and their economy's growing at a faster rate? They're already second in the world. Their economy's growing at a faster rate than the US's. Do you think that this kind of conflict and competition is inevitable when countries get to this point?
I mean, it's what Trump was all about, isn't it? It was a big part of his thing, I think, during his campaign in 2016, was constantly banging on about how American industry had declined and the economy was weak and China was emerging and strong, and falsely creating the sense that America had become weak and let China grow strong. But that's not really how things work, even though it's kind of how things should work in a capitalist economy. Very odd, isn't it, how Americans perceive capitalism as the be-all and end-all until it stops working for them. But I agree, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is inevitable. This is how power structures have always changed throughout history in the world. Empires rise and fall. That's what they do. It's just we're seeing it happen economically now. Wars are still fought, obviously, but they are fought for different reasons, it seems. All the wars in the Middle East are not so much about economic prominence as they are just desperate need for oil and ideological opposition to Islam and American culture, is my humble opinion.
Yeah. I mean, on a very, I guess a more day-to-day basis, do you think that any of the cases of, say, worries about China with Huawei and the hacking there, and the issues with 5G, and also with TikTok, you know, which, of course, Trump was very, very big on banning TikTok. Do you think those will just continue, those kind of tensions? Because the thing about Trump is he got very, very involved in the cases that involved big media corporations, because they're well known to the public. So he used it as an opportunity to drum up support, saying, oh, this is what China are doing. This is how they're infiltrating your everyday lives.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you think that Biden will take a similar approach in terms of these Chinese corporations at a domestic level?
I think that's what his press secretary has said in response to this, what Xi Jinping said. Jen Psaki, is that how you pronounce her surname? P-S-A-K-I? I'm not sure. But
we'll
I'm
hear
so
it more and more in the future going forward.
But, well, I mean, I was going to say, isn't it nice to not have to know who the press secretary is? But she said that his remarks don't change anything about how the administration is approaching the relationship with Beijing, and that Biden's view is the U.S. needs to play a better defense when it comes to protecting American technology. Said the administration will continue to review key issues such as investments by Chinese companies and Chinese telecommunications companies as well.
It's one real point of consensus, isn't it, between the two administrations?
Yeah, surprisingly.
Yeah. Will Biden ban TikTok? What's going to happen? Carry on with that?
It will be interesting to see, because almost certainly the Democrats will reinforce and pursue the American intelligence community's assessment of Russian interference in American elections, right? And I think it would be really hard for them to, on the one hand, pursue anti-Russian agenda on that basis and ignore the genuine issues that have been detected over here in Britain and in Australia, let's not forget, with China spying and infiltrating through technology in the marketplace, Western allies. So, I think actually we joke, but I wouldn't be surprised if Biden banning TikTok or doing something to TikTok. Because, of course, the big issue with it was TikTok, wasn't it, that Microsoft was looking to buy their American portion. So if Microsoft were to buy it, I think the Biden administration might do something, you know, attach some strings and say, yeah, you can buy it, but you're going to have to do something about the security issues. But then it would become a headline issue again. In the meantime, let's not forget that Trump repeatedly accused China of creating COVID-19. China virus, the Hong Kong flu. And again, this last week, I think it was last week, China, Xi Jinping has, Chinese media, sorry, which is not at all controlled by the Chinese government, has claimed that the COVID-19 virus came from American military labs.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to see the shift away from the, I guess they're alternatives to the wet market theory, aren't they? Of where the virus originated from. Do you think we're ever going to find out an answer to that? I mean, of course, the World Health Organization, was it? Who went over and wanted to get into the country but were delayed for, was it 2 weeks? And now they're there, they're not actually able to look at the kind of security at the labs that were supposedly working on researching viruses in China and in Wuhan specifically. So I'm not sure we're ever going to actually find out the origin of the coronavirus with this current tension, because the stakes are too high. There's already a huge rhetoric in the US against China, partly drummed up by Trump, but also I think people naturally, whether right or wrong, are going to look at where it originated from and say, could you have done more to prevent this from spreading? I think that's a fairly natural response, even if it doesn't make sense when you look at countries like us and our government seems to be struggling so badly with the situation again.
China in total has had 90,000 cases of coronavirus.
Sounds suspicious, doesn't it?
And they just stopped reporting it, didn't they? Yeah. They're just like, it's done now.
It's funny because if you watch the film Contagion from 2011, again, it's so crazy how much it reflects what happened in 2020, politically with the China thing, as well as because I think in that film there's World Health Organization representatives who are barred from investigating properly in China, and China doesn't cooperate and China blames America. It's just sad it's sad how predictable it is. You just reminded me, Obama was heavily criticized for, in response to the 2008 recession, allowing China to buy a lot of America's debt. And that's when I remember a lot of the fear mongering around China started, so much so that we had a nuclear power plant, didn't we, in Britain, which was going to be mostly built by Chinese companies, and it basically got cancelled because the anti-China sentiment grew to the point where our government found it politically unviable to allow these Chinese companies to build this nuclear power station. And that's possibly an example of where, if a Cold War takes off, where we can see it affecting everyday lives. There might not be a big war, but we might have possibly beneficial things, like you say, like 5G, like nuclear power just not happening, and society just gets set back unnecessarily by potentially decades, and people's amenities and quality of life is unnecessarily held back because we are not ordering all the PPE that we need from China. We're not ordering all the plastic toys that we want from China. You know, Nintendo takes over the world because at least Japan manufactures most of it.
An interesting stat is that in the US at the moment, the counterintelligence, almost half of all cases of counterintelligence are based on cases against China.
Wow.
Almost half. Yeah, there's currently 5,000 open, and almost half of them. It just shows the scale at which China is seen as the biggest threat to the US. Yeah. And if that's the FBI doing that, I don't imagine it would change anytime soon.
Yeah,
Russia must be pissed.
Yeah,
no, we're the biggest threat. We're the baddies. Come on, respect us.
Do you think a big part of where the resources go is down to public perception? Do you think that? We looked at ISIS. Now ISIS have been decimated in a lot of ways, but you don't hear anything about ISIS now.
That's true.
Like, it was the threat to the US, to Europe, and there were numerous terrorist attacks. Now there are plenty of reasons why we've seen a slowdown in attacks in the UK and also in Europe. Partly due to the travel restrictions, I imagine, in part, on occasions. You think about some people, you know, go abroad to either get weapons or training or whatever. So, but it's just not in the news at the moment. And if China is in the news, then resources go towards that, because ultimately it comes down to how the public perceives the FBI and also the administration to be effectively combating the biggest threat to the US. So if that's seen as China, then resources go into that. If it's seen as Russia, if it's seen as terrorism, and that's how it's kind of divvied up. What do you think about that?
I think there's something in that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, China is, I think, the only country in the world whose economy grew last year, apparently.
But really?
Okay.
The only major economy to report growth amid the pandemic last year. Hmm. And economists are forecasting an expansion of 8.3% this year, apparently. Compared with 4.1% in the US.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they are clearly like the one to watch at the moment. Whereas, like you say, I feel like ISIS, the reason why that was so prominent in the news was because they were hitting us in our in our homes, you know, like over here, that like the threat was very real, or felt very real, you know, because it was happening in, you know, countries near us and here as well.
Yeah. Yes, because there's lots of criticism at the time at how, which we discussed, I remember, about how the media wasn't reporting terror attacks carried out by Islamist extremists in Africa and in India and places like that, because we just don't care about that. But as soon as it hit Europe, it suddenly became a really big thing. Cause,
whereas, like, all the, you know, the genocide of the Uyghurs in parts of China, you know, doesn't feel like a huge big deal for a lot of people, because it's not here, you know, it's over there. I mean, even though it's a horrific thing.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, talking about things that aren't considered such a big deal, the situation in Yemen, Biden's not funding the Saudis in Yemen at the moment. He's put an end to that, which is for Yemen is a great thing. It's a great thing. I mean, thousands and thousands of children were starving as a result of the blockades. So
I remember us talking about that years ago on the other podcast that must not be named.
That was horrific. Yeah, it was still going on until a few weeks ago. So, crazy. That's, I mean, that was high up the list, but that was a long time coming.
I mean, well, it'll be interesting to see if the US still sells weapons to Saudi Arabia, though. I suspect they will.
That's, I mean, the UK is doing that, isn't it? Literally. Admittedly, it was two prime ministers ago. No, it wasn't. It was one prime minister ago. It feels like ages ago. I can't remember. We had a prime minister who openly criticized Saudi Arabia pretty much the same week that they signed a deal that allowed us to sell arms to Saudi Arabia. It's just like, what are you doing? So speaking of weapons, if America and China stopped being Cold War and just went toe-to-toe,
Hot war.
Who would win? You got some stats at all about?
I think we'd all lose.
About
whoever wins, we lose.
No one would win.
I think if you're looking at land armies, China, the population, it dwarfs the US, doesn't it?
It does indeed. We've got some. We've got some statistics.
I thought you might.
That we could read out. obviously. If you're not aware, China does have a notably bigger population than America, so understandably it has more people it can draw on for its armed forces. Active personnel in their military, actually closer than I was expecting. So America has 1.3, rounding up, million active military personnel. China has 2.3.
So that's quite a lot. Only more, a million, an extra million.
I mean, extra million, yeah, arguably. but given how China's population is 1.3 billion and America's population is under 400 million, I'd have expected an even bigger discrepancy between the sizes of their military. But you're right, a million people is nothing to sniff at.
It's America's military-industrial complex. People were just designed and programmed to go into the military.
Yeah, because of course America's military budget is $610 million under Trump, and it's $610 billion under Trump. I don't know if Biden's going to cut that. Whereas China's military funding is $230 billion. It's tiny in comparison, because $230 billion is obviously a lot of money. You can do a lot with that. But when with a country as big as China, that's a small percentage of its GDP. So it's relatively modest. But what's really interesting for me in terms of armed personnel is the reserves, because America has just over 800,000 reserve personnel. So if they were to go to war, they would only have 800,000 people available to fill the gaps when casualties started happening. China, on the other hand, is 8 million in reserve. So not only do they start with a million more soldiers, but they have another 8 million ready to fill the gap. So they could very easily start with 10 million if they wanted versus America's 2 million. And that would obviously, presumably, work in China's favor.
You wouldn't want to be in the first wave knowing that, would you? Yeah. The generals wouldn't care. It's like, we've got reserves.
We've got so many reserves. We could just swamp them, do the whole Russian steamroller thing in World War II. And when it comes to tanks, they're pretty evenly matched. China has more, but barely 1,000 more tanks. And I would be willing to bet that American tanks are probably better than Chinese tanks. Just going to say, I'm going to stick my neck out and say that American funding and research into their military technology is probably slightly better than China's. Not saying China wouldn't win a tank battle, but I'm just saying that in terms of the hardware, it's probably better in America. Planes is interesting because China's Air Force is a lot smaller than America's. America's got over 12,000 aircraft. China has 4,000. So it's about third of the size.
Yeah.
But of that 4,000, China has over 1,000 fighter planes, whereas America has 450. Yeah, again, so China could, in terms of aerial combat, China absolutely has the numbers to overwhelm America. But the size of the Air Force overall, which is support vehicles, troop carriers, tank carriers as well, vehicle carriers, as well as multi-purpose aircraft, spy craft that can also fight, bombers that can also fight. Mm-hmm. America has way more. So could probably do more in a long-term campaign if the war were to drag out.
Isn't that America's, like, their specialty? They can just immediately, like, with super quickly, just basically bring an entire city to another country, like an entire military outpost, like,
yeah, they can
instantly
as we saw in the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, they can get from America to Egypt in record time.
But if you watch The Lost World, though, they struggle to contain one T-Rex. So swings around about.
Interestingly, just a little tidbit. I mentioned this before we started recording, actually. I was surprised to see that America has nearly 5,000 helicopters and China has 1,000. That's a lot of helicopters. Why America? Why do you think you need so many helicopters?
Well, they're all left over from Vietnam.
Yeah, they're all 1960s jokes. Yeah. So, of course, when it comes to the Navy, China's got 780 ships versus America's 430. So that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. But of that 430, America has 20 aircraft carriers. China has two. So, again, in terms of... And destroyers, like America has twice as many destroyers as China. So most of China's Navy is frigates and corvettes, kind of support ships rather than battleships. Submarines are actually evenly matched. They've both got about 70, which is
kind of... Well, let's get on to the really scary stuff. How many nukes? Give me the nukes.
How many nukes? Yes. That's submarines, nuclear submarines. They're the ones that carry the nukes. So guesses. How many nukes does America have?
How many nukes or warheads?
Warheads. Yeah, let's go with warheads. Yeah.
Last time... Is it around like 13,000?
Oh, that sounds like a...
It's actually a lot fewer than that.
I go for less. 2,314.
Well, you're both wrong, but Martin's technically closer. It's 6,500 warheads, apparently.
Okay.
I think I was thinking of the amount, but like in the globally.
Yeah, maybe.
Because Russia and America have similar numbers.
In America, I think America had like 30 or... more thousands at one point during the Cold War, but currently it's down to just over 6,000. But they've deployed, it's a crazy thing, they've got over 1,600 deployed, ready to launch, which is mad.
It doesn't really matter when you get to that stage, does it? You've destroyed everything.
I suppose, yeah. Once you get above 50, you're probably going to kill the world, so you might as well just keep going.
1600.
We've got 1,600 warheads ready to be launched right now. China, on the other hand, has... only about an estimated, no one knows for sure, obviously it's China, approximately 300 warheads.
Yeah.
Which sound, you're like, oh, America's got the edge. But again, we're talking about nukes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, really.
Exactly. I think it's very unlikely that it will matter how many troops you've got in reserve in either China or America. You're not going to get troops on mainland China, are you? Chinese troops. And it is going to be a Cold War. And that's why that's why Xi Jinping coming out with this is so much more alarming, because of course it's going to be a Cold War. It's going to be fought on the battlefronts of digital warfare, of cybersecurity, of the hearts and minds of the people of the nation. These are the frontiers where it's going to be fought as opposed to on the ground. So,
yeah, absolutely.
That's why this is more concerning than maybe just if this was rhetoric like this was said a few years ago. because it encompasses so much more.
If he was playing Civilization, Xi Jinping, he's going for an economic victory. He's not going for a military victory.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of what's most interesting to me about this situation. Kind of thing we haven't spoken about yet is that, of course, the Cold War that we all know ended with Russia as the losers, so to speak. Everyone think, you know, America won, the Cold War ended, and it was an economic victory for America, is at least the perception. I don't know enough about it to actually make a meaningful judgment on who won and who lost.
I think it's a fairly accurate perception.
Yeah, I think that's that's certainly the seems to be the consensus, the accepted consensus.
But it was China, when, like, the Soviet Union broke up, right? Like,
yeah, the Soviet Union broke up. So the Soviets lost, absolutely. But did Russia lose? Yeah, anyway, communism collapsed. It became capitalist in most ways, but it's kind of never really, as we know, with Putin, it hasn't really changed. And he's slowly, but it seems inexorably, rebuilding the Soviet Union after annexing Crimea and wherever he's got his eyes on next. Point is, anyway, first time around, America won, and it was an economic victory. This time round, it seems to me like China has the edge.
Yeah. I mean, they're growing faster. Ooh. And I think America is still number one economically, but who knows how long that's going to go on for. Until, you know, China becomes the largest economy in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about them, the only developed, that's the wrong word, the only advanced economy that actually grew last year.
Mm.
And what do you say, they predicted 8% growth this year?
8% growth?
Yeah, which is huge.
It's only going to be a matter of time, isn't it, before the tables turn in terms of that.
The only other kind of thing though that could impact China is that I think their growth was slowing, and I think part of the reason for that is the, like, Chinese labor obviously is what a lot of, like, manufacturing and exports are, like, come from around the world, but I think different markets are, like, becoming bigger for manufacturing. I think in Vietnam and India,
right,
more investments being put into there for manufacturing.
So a bit I don't of a race, know that, race to the bottom.
So I don't know if that would have an impact on
the same thing's happening to China as what happened to America, where manufacturing moved to China and now it's moving away from China.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't know if, will they take over the top spot before that happens, or if will they find another way to secure that top spot?
It's an interesting point.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've got to look at what it's built on. You look at the capitalist nature of America, you have the average quality of life improving amongst, I don't want to say, of course, there's still huge wealth disparities, but if you look at China, there's billionaires, multi-billionaires, and quite a few of them. But then there's, of course, the absolute poorest in society, and it doesn't seem like there's as much social mobility. And so it usually happens that manufacturing will move to another country when the quality of life within that country gets to a certain level where people go, right, we don't have to work as slaves in this factory. There's other alternatives for us because society is improving as a whole. With China the way it is, in the quite oppressive regime, will we get to that stage? Or will there still be enough exploited workers over time working for nothing that it's economically viable to keep exporting at the same rate that they are at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's I'm of that mind. I think the difference between China, I think, and Russia during the Cold War is that as evil as the communist regime got, it suppressed dissent more than it exploited its people, if that makes sense. Whereas China does both, and it's willing to go very far. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, Soviet Union did unspeakable evils, but after Stalin died in the 1950s, it never went so far again, I think, and which is what led slowly to its failure, which is because they were never willing to go that far. Whereas I think China under Xi Jinping, as we've spoken about with the Uyghurs, is already going that far and is willing to continue to exploit the slaves. And through social media, controls thought more than it needs to suppress dissent. It does also suppress dissent, but it's able to, as we know, it censors the internet. It controls the internet so well over there, as well as general advertising and propaganda, as well as the Communist Party being the only way into political power, that it doesn't. It's control. I feel like it's more successful at controlling people, as well as more willing to exploit them. But as you say,
also, like, the Soviet Union was having economic problems that I think people's quality of life, like you were saying, was deteriorating. But in China, a large part of their population have, like, gone from living in, you know, straw huts and living off the land, and from that, in like one generation, to being in the middle class. I think they have a massive portion, or like a growing portion of their population, that's entering the middle class now.
Maybe that will signify manufacturing moving then.
Well, I think a lot of the case, either through propaganda or from that, I think a large part of the population is actually kind of happy with the government over there, because their generation is like the first generation of, in many countries, that are actually going to be wealthier than the previous generation. I find that interesting. But like you say, I mean, yeah, as you know, their middle class grows, is it still going to be financially viable for them to do all their labor like in their country, or will they have to outsource it to other countries? And then
you're talking about the, you know, over 1 billion people. You're thinking that purely from a manufacturing point of view, there, at least for a good few years, there'll be enough people that are ready and waiting to exploit. As much as, I mean, I don't know the population of Vietnam, actually, off the top of my head.
It's a much smaller place.
Just from purely logistics. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. I didn't know that was the case. I knew that a lot of people in China had become ultra, ultra rich through various means, but I imagine quite a few are actually exploiting the lower classes. But I didn't know that there was a huge growing middle class. I didn't know that it was to that extent.
Apparently so. I'm just reading one article. One estimate puts their middle class at 400 million people.
About a third of the population.
Which is, not sure what their median income is for that.
It's relative.
So apparently it's between $3,600 and $36,400 is the median income.
For their middle class
household in China.
That's a pretty...
Which doesn't seem... It seems
quite,
pretty...
Quite a large gap there, yeah.
Maybe it depends on where you are.
Which one's median? How does that work?
Median's...
As an average.
Is when you line them all up and it's the middle.
Yeah. So
the median
that is a broad
covers $33,000. Pretty broad. What does everyone listening at home think? Please tell us, either if you're watching us on YouTube in the comments below, or if you're listening to us on whatever podcast platform you like to listen to us on, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Please send us a message on Twitter. We are at JInterestingYT. Tell us your thoughts. And thank you also to our Patreons and our YouTube members who help keep this podcast going. And this week we were discussing slightly less serious issues than a new Cold War with China. We were talking about Google threatening to withdraw from Australia and, hopefully a funny story that I found amusing, which I read to Alex and Martin.
It was a nice surprise for us.
But yes, please do tell us your thoughts about whether you think a new Cold War is going to happen, and how would it happen, and who would win. And in the meantime, up for a quiz?
Yeah. Always.
Welcome to the quiz. As always, there are 10 questions plus a bonus question, although there will be more points than 10 available during this quiz. You are forewarned.
How could you?
A repeat of Alex's formula last time. And so far, Alex is the king to beat. Martin.
He's smashing it.
No pressure.
Actually.
He's got a 100% win record. It's crazy.
I've only won two quizzes. You're one behind me.
Exactly.
You've only played two quizzes, Alex.
I believe in you, Martin. I believe in you. And I believe in you, Alex. I believe either of you could get this quiz. we'll see.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, to win a quiz, you need to answer questions. To answer questions, you need to buzz in. What are your buzzers, Martin?
My classic. Always the same. Always the same.
Let's be having you!
Good idea.
We're another 12 man, eh?
To order for... One time I'm going to play the whole thing, because it is quality.
So good. And Alex, what's your buzzer?
I've gone for something a bit different this week. Maybe it'll be my downfall, I don't know. I've gone for this one.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest. Have a look at the headlock here. Get your hand off my penis!
To anyone who hasn't seen that, it's an Australian man getting arrested for supposedly stealing a meal from a Chinese restaurant.
What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
Was he drunk as well? Is this another drunk?
I think so.
Yeah. Sounds it, doesn't he?
Yeah. He is a bit. Yeah,
definitely a little... Had too much rice
wine.
Seems
to be a running theme with our buzzers, doesn't it?
They are the best buzzers.
Being drunk is just funny.
Universal truth. Can't deny that. Yeah. So, question number one. The Vatican City is the smallest country in the world.
Oh, no.
What's the second smallest?
Oh, question.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest.
Don't know if it counts. I don't think it does. Monaco?
Yeah, Monaco.
Yes!
Well done.
Very good.
Nice.
Monaco is the second smallest country in the world. 1-0 to Alex. On to question two. What is a baby rabbit called?
Gentlemen,
he's thinking. I can see him thinking.
Yes, Alex.
Is it a kit or kitten?
It is. Both of those things. It is a kitten in full, but commonly called a kit.
Well done. Didn't know that.
See, that was the one question I actually wasn't thinking, because I think I knew that one.
Man, I didn't know that either. I thought that would be more of a stumper, but more of a head scratcher. But
don't question my knowledge of baby rabbits.
All right then, question number three, and it is 2-0 to Alex.
Blimey.
This is the closest wins, so Martin, you do have a chance.
Martin has a chance anyway.
Yours has a chance. In what year?
The confidence.
Closest wins. In what year did rugby league split from rugby union?
Oh god.
Well, I'm not going first on this one.
Okay.
I couldn't even guess the century on this.
Do you want to try?
I'm all right.
Rugby union split from rugby league. Okay. Try to think. Did it go back that far? Ooh. Okay. Oh well. Come on, screw it. I'll just guess.
Yeah.
Let's go for. Let's go for. 1896.
Okay, that's your guess. Alex, what's yours?
I'm going to go for...
Gentlemen, this is the...
What did you say, Martin? 1894? I'm not going to say right after that. I'll say 1910.
I think it was earlier.
Okay, well, the answer is 1895.
Wow.
Martin, you were almost dead on.
Wow.
I was
thinking of looking up the Wikipedia pages between teams and thinking, how far back did it go? Because I look at the results
sometimes.
Yeah, that's
a good answer.
Like,
yeah.
How much, Martin, would you have hated me if I did that?
You've gone 1 year.
If you'd gone 1 year earlier, yeah, that would have been so nice.
I would have been gutted.
I was so... When you went 1890, I was like, oh, he's going to get it. And he said six. And I was like, no, Alex can get this if he goes the right way. So, yeah. 2-1 to Alex. Going into question four. Put on your literary hats. We all know... We've heard of the Bronte sisters, famous novelists. And their brother, who was less famous, I think famous for being the brother of the famous novelist. But which one of the Bronte sisters wrote Jane Eyre?
Gentlemen, where are you?
Ooh, I'm not sure who that was, actually. Ooh, that was tight. I think it's Alex.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Charlotte Bronte?
Yes, it was.
Yes!
Was all you going to say, Martin?
It was a 50-50. So yeah, I was going to go for Charlotte, but it could have just as easily been Emily. So.
It was so close, I couldn't tell whose buzzer that was.
Studied Jane Eyre in English. Incredibly boring.
I've never studied that one. Never read it.
I haven't read it either. I've seen adaptations of it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Typical man answer. I haven't read it. Yeah. Seen a film.
I've read it.
Okay, question number 5. How many pounds are in a stone? That was Martin. That was definitely Martin.
Yeah. I didn't buzz, so yeah.
It's 14.
It is correct. 14 pounds in a stone. So that's 3-2. Going on to question 6. Vanilla spice comes from which flower? Vanilla As in spice. The plant flower. Not... not a specific flower, but like the type of flower. Yeah. You don't have to give me the specific
gentlemen, name. This is
yes, Alex.
Democracy.
If it's not specific, a lily.
No.
Oh, okay.
But that's an acceptable answer.
Yeah. Oh, vanilla spice. Are we talking about this, like vanilla?
Yeah, vanilla. It's a spice, even though
I just sort of just,
yeah.
Just making sure.
Vanilla spice, the follow-up act to vanilla ice.
It's like a, what even are they? I'm just trying to think. What could it be?
Ooh.
Open your florist mind, Martin.
I genuinely don't know, because you only see them really dried, don't you?
That's true.
Are they dried? They are dried, aren't they?
I think it's the seed pods, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, man, I literally have no idea.
Well, you can have a guess, and I can give you a clue, or I could just go straight to giving you a clue.
Yeah, let's go for a clue, why not?
The clue is, it's an exotic plant.
Are you?
Yes, Martin.
Are you? Exotic? That's not really exotic, is it? I just think... No, I was going to say something stupid. Alex, you can go first if you want to.
This is democracy.
Exotic. A lotus?
No.
Ooh, nice guess.
But that was a good guess, yeah.
Is a eucalyptus?
No.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's a tree, so this is...
How exotic we saw.
another clue that might help is it's a rare flower.
Rare flower.
Yes, it's one that's of those.
Exotic.
I don't know rare. My flowers, Robert. You're confusing me.
This is the issue.
It's a flower that you... It's a type of flower that you would have in your home, but it's considered...
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, Martin?
Is it an orchid?
It is an orchid. Yes. Aww. Yeah. Good. Those clues made sense then.
Yes. They made a lot of sense. Yeah.
I was like, not sure how to say this. Like, it's spelled O-R-C-A. Yeah. So, well then, orchid. And I think that means it's 3-all. Going into question 7.
Hang on. What?
I think it might
3-all?
Be. Yeah, I think so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I've got that one.
Yeah, you got Monaco, Kitten, Charlotte Bronte, and Martin got Rugby Union, Pounds in a Stone.
Right. Sorry. Fair enough.
He can't be drawing.
That's illegal.
So
I'm the winner here.
Oh no.
Well, this one's a bit of a history question, but also geography.
Oh.
So the country of Sri Lanka became a republic in 1972, and it used to be known as what?
Oh my goodness, I've gone blank.
He's left the goal wide open.
Gentlemen,
yes, Alex.
I don't know if this is something totally different. Swaziland?
No.
No.
Different
no.
continent.
Where's that? Is that a different continent?
South Africa, next to South Africa.
My bad.
Was it? It's north? The north something? No, I'm not on the right line, sir.
Okay, no. Yeah, I'll just stop here. No, it's not. I'll give you a clue. It's still a word we use for a type of tea. Not big tea drinkers here, apparently.
I mean,
I drink tea.
But I'm trying to. I'm trying to not. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I drink English breakfast, and that's not the answer. Yes, Alex.
Chamomile?
No.
No.
No, but yeah, that's. Yeah. What the hell is There's a type of tea that has the name because it came from Sri Lanka. Yeah.
I'm going to kick myself.
Better clues.
Yorkshire Gold. Yeah. PG Tips.
It used to be known as Yorkshire. Tetley. That is correct. British Empire. I plant my flag and claim this land as Yorkshire. The answer is Ceylon.
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 Never heard of that.
Ceylon.
Never had the tea.
All right, then. Sorry, this quiz has turned out to be a lot harder than I thought. I apologise. Although you're scoring brilliantly, so this is great. So question number 8, still 3-all. Only 3 questions to win. Oh, but this question is worth a lot of points.
Okay.
So, can you tell me the 6 founding members of the European Union? 1 point for each country.
Do you answer one at a time?
If you buzz in and tell me as many as you like, or you can alternate, it's up to you.
So would it be six? So if someone gets
there
one
are
wrong,
6 of them. If someone
has a scoring work, that's what I'm wondering.
Oh, I see.
Of the European Union.
Because if you get 5 of them and then you get it wrong, and someone says the other one, do they get 6 points?
Oh no, they get 1 point for each country, so they get 1 point.
Okay.
Where are you? Yes, Martin.
France.
That's 1 point. Yep.
Do I carry on?
I thought you wanted individual people, like world leaders.
No, no.
I didn't realize this
member
was
member states. Countries. I should have said. Yeah, not the people. Gosh.
I was going to say, like, oh my god, what?
France, Germany.
Hmm.
Then there was also Italy.
Hmm.
And then there was also Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And Spain.
Okay. You got Belgium, France, and Italy. Mm-hmm. So that's 3 points. Okay. You are incorrect about the others.
Okay.
So
you said Spain, Germany, and Switzerland. Was that the ones you got wrong?
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Okay. And you said France, Italy, Belgium. Oh boy. I will go for. Oh dear.
Gentlemen, this is...
I'll add...
Yes.
Poland. Austria.
Uh-huh.
Kind of gone on the other side here.
Uh-huh.
And... The UK? No, we voted to join it, didn't
that
we?
That was optimistic of you, yeah.
Join it in like 1970.
I'm afraid all 3 of those were incorrect. Okay, so I'll give you some clues. I'll give you some clues, then you can buzz in.
Okay.
Okay, so think about the time of when the European Union was formed and the topic of this conversation. So one of Martin's guesses was close, but not technically correct.
Okay.
And then the other two countries are actually very small.
Let's be having you!
Okay, Martin.
Okay, so I'll go for three, yeah? Okay. So I'm going to go for Luxembourg, nice and small.
Mm-hmm.
The Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And... you can't be that, because that's, they would be onto them and onto that. Ooh. Well, the country's very small. What's a very small country? No, not small enough. Plus, it's next to Spain, and Spain wouldn't have joined. But...
oh, I'm going to give you a three.
Okay.
Two.
Really small. San Marino. Why not?
No, you were correct. 2 points for Luxembourg and the Netherlands.
Yeah.
The other country is not a small country. It's to do with timing.
Doesn't matter. Martin's won.
He's got... well, no. He's got... yeah, everyone, hasn't he? Yeah.
No, he's got 8 points.
He's got 8 points.
Can't come back from that.
That's true. You can get a point, though, and then the next 2 points right, so you can close the gap.
Wow. Can't believe this question.
Can't believe you've done this.
Shambolic question for me. For Martin, it's been great.
Fantastic.
So the next country, it's a big country, Alex, but it's one that has been stated, but incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. One that has been stated incorrectly. So what was the ones that
I said, think about the time when the European Union was formed.
It was Spain. What did you say, Martin? That got was incorrect.
Spain, Italy, and what was the other one? It's where the other one is.
Italy one was right, though, wasn't it?
Italy was correct.
Italy was right. No, Italy was right. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of what I said.
Yes, you said Spain. That was
Germany.
Yeah, that's right.
Germany, which was right, and I said France, which was right.
No, Germany was wrong.
Germany was wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, sounds like Martin's got it, but Alex, can you get it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what Germany really was then.
East Germany was, but West Germany was the founding member of the European Union.
Yeah, so split in half.
Yeah. So that was the one we got wrong. So I felt wrong giving you the point for Germany, but...
No, yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that's pretty decisive 8-3 score for Martin.
Big round there.
Yeah, very big one. Sorry, very generous question. But question number 9 is nice and
absolutely
easy.
Absolutely fuming. If you can see anyone listening now, he's shaking his head. He's not having.
Nice, easy, true.
It's just not balanced. It's just not realistic.
True or false for question number 9? Okay. So fingers on buzzers. The Beatles song "I Am the Walrus" was banned by the BBC. True or false?
Gentlemen,
yes, Alex.
False.
I was going to say true.
It is true. It was banned because...
Take your point. I didn't want to end
it. It was banned for the line that said, "You've been a naughty girl, you let your knickers down."
Oh, duh.
Too racy.
Can they bleep
it? Do you want 5 points for that, Martin?
No.
5 points for that, you want.
No. And then question number 10. Fingers on buzzers. What does IPA stand for?
I busted by the way.
Where are you?
Yes.
A rugby question and a craft beer question, Robin.
You know the answer to this.
No.
Oh, yeah,
is.
I do, actually, but I was so angry that you would ask it.
Now, a lot of people get this wrong, though. A lot of people get this wrong. Because what they say that's wrong is they say Indian pale ale, and it's not. It's India pale ale. Yeah.
This is true. Very true.
Mm.
And that is the correct answer. well done, Martin. Do you want to do a bonus question?
Well done, Martin. Well done.
Thanks,
congratulations.
I think it was a pretty solid victory.
You would have got those last two anyway. So you would have won either way. is what I'm
saying. Thank you. That's very,
even with that ridiculous 5-point question.
I thought that's, that European Union question might be split more evenly. I apologize. It could have been. But well done, Martin, for conquering that. I mean, you had as many chances, Alex. So, yeah.
I did, in fairness. Yeah. Need to research my history of the EU, clearly.
Do you want the bonus question?
No, forget it.
Okay.
No, yeah, go on.
All right. Question number 11. Who was the king of pop?
Gentlemen.
Yes, Alex.
This is the
That was Michael Jackson.
It was Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
There you go. Just... Yeah.
Do you have this Michael Jackson impression, Alex?
No, I don't care to do that. Thank you.
Come here, little Chad. Come here.
No. Yeah.
Did you?
That was good, though. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that, Robin. Did you watch that Michael Jackson documentary?
Oh, about
the victims growing up. Yeah.
Tough to watch.
Horrendous. Yeah. Horrendous. Yeah.
It wasn't very pleasant. No.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry.
Well, on that note,
everyone have a good week.
Well, then you'll
just wanted to distract from my incredibly bad loss then.
No, I still think that puts you top place though, right? Because you've only...
You play less. Oh, you might be two ahead, actually.
No, I'm not. I think this is
3-1-2. Martin, you've won 2 out of 4, maybe?
That sounds right.
I think you might still be top of the league, Alex. So, you know.
Oh, well. In terms of games played, though... Again, I think this proves that I was never like storming ahead. I literally won ahead of you.
Still in first place?
I don't know.
66% win rate?
Yeah.
Well, hitting the mic in anger.
Sorry about that.
Well, thank you for listening. Those at home, let us know your quiz scores. Sorry if that was a really hard quiz. I'd like to know if anybody got that European Union question the first time around. And please also continue to share your thoughts and comments on everything we discussed this week. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.